Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the Q&A session, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star one on your phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And now I'd like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Kathy Harbin. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Ted, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of a new CDC vital signs on stopping multi-state foodborne outbreaks. We are joined by the director for the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden. Joining us today also is Philip Durfler, deputy administrator for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service, and Dr. Kathleen Gensheimer, director and chief medical officer of the Coordinated Outbreak Response and Evaluation, that's CORE, network at the Food and Drug Administration. At the end of these speakers' comments, you will be able to ask questions. Dr. Frieden?
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us. CDC works 24/7 to keep Americans safe, healthy, and secure, and each vital signs focuses on a disease from the front lines of CDC science to tell you what can be done to protect and save more lives. This month's vital signs is about food safety, and I know that many of you on the line are wondering about the most recent outbreak to hit the news. This is a cluster of E. coli infections in Washington and Oregon State linked to eating from Chipotle Mexican Grill restaurants. And I can tell you that we don't have much more to tell you about this outbreak other than that it is an example of the type of multi-state outbreak that we're describing in this particular vital signs. More information will be available day by day with it. We don't yet know of a vehicle, what food caused it, or whether what the association is, or even with certainty whether all of the cases that are identified there are members of are related to each other. We do know that Chipotle has closed many of its restaurants until more information is available. There's no reason to believe that this is associated with the prior outbreaks that have affected them, but the investigation is really just starting now. This month's vital signs is about foodborne outbreaks that occur when contaminated food is sent to several states and makes people sick from the same particular organism. Not only can foodborne outbreaks make a lot of people sick, they can also be hard to trace back and find the source of contamination. Here are the facts. Every year, about 1 in 6 Americans gets sick from eating contaminated food. CDC's disease detectives are finding an increasing number of outbreaks that occur in many states at once. On average, we find about 2 per month. These multi-state foodborne outbreaks can be big and they can be lethal. They're caused by food contaminated on farms or in production facilities before it gets to the supermarket or restaurant or home kitchen. The problem of multi-state outbreaks is that you can have many more people sick in more places because of food production and distribution. Foods today come from lots of places and countries and are usually distributed into more than one state. I'm delighted to be joined by colleagues from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service and the Food and Drug Administration as well. We've been working together for many years to prevent and stop foodborne illness, and they'll be speaking about new rules and regulations to make food safer. Let's look what's happening with the diversity of foods and outbreaks. In 2014, our disease detectives, working together with state and local governments, with the FDA and USDA, uncovered a listeria outbreak linked to caramel apples that made 35 people sick in 12 states. Tragically, 7 people died. CDC is now working with other public health agencies tracking a salmonella outbreak that sickened more than 750 people in 36 states, and sadly, 4 so far have died. This outbreak, which is linked to cucumbers imported from Mexico, is one of the biggest multi-state foodborne outbreaks we've investigated in the past decade. Investigating these outbreaks often finds problems on the farm or in processing or distribution that lead to contaminated food. We looked to the lessons learned from these outbreaks to help strengthen food safety. For this Vital Signs report, our scientists looked at outbreaks for a 5-6 year period from 2009 to 2014, 120 multi-state foodborne outbreaks, and focuses on the illnesses and deaths linked to them. While multi-state outbreaks account for just 3% of all outbreaks we know of, foodborne outbreaks we know of, they cause 11% of illnesses, 34% of hospitalizations, and 56% of deaths in foodborne outbreaks. Some of these outbreaks are caused by antibiotic-resistant germs, which increase the risk of hospitalization, a bloodstream infection, or an untreatable infection. Multi-state outbreaks have much more serious health effects than other foodborne outbreaks, and it's a little confusing or a puzzle to say why that should be so. The reason, we believe, is that the germs that cause most of the multi-state outbreaks are deadlier. 91% of these multi-state outbreaks are caused by three bacteria, Salmonella, E. coli, and Listeria. And the numbers don't tell the whole story. We estimate that for every single case reported of Salmonella infection, there are 29 unreported cases. For every E. coli 0157H7 case, there are 26 unreported cases, and for Listeria, there are about twice as many total cases as the number reported. This year, multidrug-resistant Salmonella sickened more than 150 people in an outbreak linked to pork. 24 were hospitalized. In 2013 and 2014, the Salmonella that caused a large outbreak linked to chicken was resistant to several of the commonly used antibiotics. 634 people got sick in that outbreak, nearly 40% hospitalized. The 2016 budget requests additional funding for CDC to improve the detection and tracking of drug-resistant organisms. The proposal would allow CDC to check Salmonella for resistance in nearly every sick person and to check a larger proportion of other bacterial infections as well. Finding these outbreaks often depends on DNA fingerprinting of the germ that makes people sick. That's beginning to happen more and more in public health labs around the country. One reason we're finding more outbreaks is that our laboratory methods for finding them are getting better. Thanks to funding from Congress for the past several years, we've initiated an advanced molecular detection initiative using whole genome sequencing to find specific infections and fingerprints, working very closely with our partners at the FDA, USDA, and the National Institutes of Health. We're finding more Listeria outbreaks, solving them quicker, and getting contaminated food off the shelf faster. In fact, this has been a way of not just stopping outbreaks, but preventing them from spreading when they could have spread much more widely. Many types of food are linked to multi-state outbreaks. Leafy greens, fruit, beef, sprouts, chicken, raw scraped ground tuna, dairy products. Sorry to go over all of these at the lunch hour, but we look at food safety, and there's no reason anyone should have to worry about getting sick from the food that they buy and eat. Some of these outbreaks were in foods that had never before been linked to outbreaks, caramel apples as an example. Disease detectives traced the implicated foods, working with FDA and USDA, to their source, and were able to find the implicated foods in nearly three-quarters of these outbreaks. They're cracking the cases much more frequently than we have been in past year because we have this new DNA fingerprinting tool being used increasingly. Still, too many outbreaks go unsolved, and that's the case because it's often hard to determine quickly what food is linked to an outbreak and where the contamination occurred. People eat lots of different things and don't always remember all of the foods they've consumed. That's even harder if the food is imported, as an increasing proportion of our food is. Most of our foodborne outbreaks happen in small groups of people in one area, people who ate at one restaurant or a community event. We want to prevent those too, but we're focusing in this report on multi-state outbreaks because they make so many people seriously sick and appear to account for most of the deaths from foodborne illness. The food industries play a critical role in improving our food safety. That includes everything from farm to table, farms, transport, distribution, processing, supermarkets, restaurants, and many industry-led best practices have resulted in significant improvements in food safety. Each time there's an outbreak, industry can help investigators trace the contaminated food and quickly notify customers who bought it by using things like store loyalty card records. This vital science comes at a time of increasing federal focus on ways to improve food safety and reduce foodborne disease. That includes the new Food Safety Modernization Act regulations from the Food and Drug Administration and new USDA standards designed to reduce salmonella and campylobacter contamination in chicken and turkey. Some companies and industry groups are already taking the lead to keep food safe. Walmart has worked with CDC to change its requirements for food suppliers and set new controls from farm to fork to reduce potential contamination. Costco has used its membership card lists to notify customers if a product they bought has been recalled. And trade groups such as the Beef Industry Food Safety Council and the California Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement are focusing on industry-led best practices. I'm now delighted to turn this over to Dr. Kathleen Genschimer, Chief Medical Officer at the FDA.
Thanks very much, Dr. Frieden. I'm very pleased to be here joining CDC and USDA as we discuss how we work together to prevent foodborne disease outbreaks. The continued collaboration between FDA, CDC, USDA, state and local public health, agriculture, regulatory, environmental, and laboratory partners is essential to effectively responding to foodborne outbreaks, but even more importantly, as you heard Dr. Frieden note, to preventing them in the first place. Foodborne illness not only impacts the individuals and families affected, it also causes significant disruption and cost on the food system, as well as posing a burden on the healthcare system, especially in these multi-state outbreaks. When there are illnesses identified as part of an outbreak, FDA's Coordinated Outbreak Response and Evaluation Network, otherwise known as CORE, collaborates with CDC, USDA, and our many partners on a 24/7 basis to find the implicated food through traceback efforts aimed at moving from the point of exposure back through the distribution chain to stop further illness by rapidly removing the adulterated product from store shelves and to prevent future outbreaks through educational outreach, policy setting, or collaboration with our partners in industry. The goal of the CORE network is to build upon the best of what FDA does in incident response and to both streamline and strengthen FDA's efforts to detect, respond, and prevent foodborne outbreaks. In its 4 years of existence, CORE, working again with its many partners, has investigated more than 120 multi-state outbreaks involving cantaloupe, peanut butter, tuna, cheese, tomatoes, mangoes, papayas, lettuce, sprouts, berries, dietary supplements, infant formula, oysters, salad, and the list goes on. To think about prevention and action, as we think back to the mid, late, early, even 1990s, we know that Salmonella enteritidis associated with shell eggs was a public health concern in this country. We recognized the large outbreak of Salmonella enteritidis that was reported in 2010. But today, virtually all eggs are produced under the egg rule, which was issued in 2009, and implemented in full in 2012 to prevent the contamination of eggs with Salmonella enteritidis. Since the implementation of the inspections, about 1,200 inspections have been conducted, and we've not seen another egg-related outbreak. This is a testament to the fact that prevention, working with our partners in industry, can and does work. We have one of the safest food supplies in the world, but more needs to be done, and more is being done. Congress passed the Food Safety Modernization Act, abbreviated as FSMA, in December 2010, which was the biggest overhaul in food safety since FDA was established in 1906. This sweeping piece of legislation was enacted because of widespread concern among legislators, consumers, and industry about foodborne illnesses that sicken thousands of individuals each year. Depending on the population affected, high-risk individuals, including young children and the elderly, suffer serious complications of foodborne disease, including hospitalizations and deaths. Today's vital signs highlight new vehicles associated with foodborne illness, and we have seen this past year, and as highlighted again by Dr. Frieden, these foods have included caramel apples and ice cream, and certainly have highlighted the diversity of challenges within the food system. Illnesses can arise from any food commodity that's not produced and handled properly, regardless of whether it's produced in the United States or overseas. But, again, to emphasize, the food safety problems we experience have that one thing in common. They are largely preventable. Congress passed FSMA to enable FDA to focus more on preventing food safety problems rather than relying primarily on reacting to problems after they occur. Before FSMA, addressing foodborne illness was reactive. People had to get sick, and then we had to identify contributing factors in the facility to take action. But reacting to problems isn't sufficient in today's food system, nor is it the best way to practice public health. FSMA is about incorporating principles based on science-based approach into how companies can build into their food system with controls we know are effective. FSMA brings prevention to all segments of the farm-to-table chain, from farms to processing plants to transportation and to imports. That is how we will protect public health, strengthen consumer confidence, and avoid the market disruptions and economic costs of foodborne illness. The produce-related outbreaks have been one that have consumed much of our attention since CORE was enacted, and I'd like to just highlight that the produce safety rule will create an entirely new regulatory landscape for the produce industry. It will establish for the first time mandatory standards for growing, harvesting, packing, and holding produce. It will focus on areas such as agricultural water, biological soil amendments, health and hygiene of the farm personnel, animals in the growing area, equipment, tools, and buildings. We're at a critical junction in our implementation of FSMA. The infrastructure must be built now to support the science-based food safety system designed to institute new safety controls on the farm, processing facilities, and in countries exporting foods to the United States. I wanted to thank CDC, USDA, and to our many state and local partners for all they have done to contribute to our collaborative efforts to investigate and to respond effectively to these foodborne outbreaks over the past several years. And I look forward to our continued collaboration as we work to create a food safety system focused on prevention. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll now turn to Philip Derfler, who is Deputy Administrator for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, FSIS, or Food Safety and Inspection Service.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. I want to thank the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for publishing this very important vital signs report. And I want to thank everybody who's on the phone for joining the call today. Outbreak prevention is something that FSIS takes very seriously. We have inspectors in every federal meat, poultry, and egg products plant every day to ensure that the products that enter commerce from these plants are not contaminated with pathogens that can cause illness. Products are not eligible to enter commerce unless our inspectors find that they are safe. To minimize the risk to human health from FSIS-regulated products, our agency requires that meat and poultry plants have in place a hazard analysis and critical control point, or HACCP, plan to prevent or to reduce contamination to the extent possible. In addition, this year FSIS proposed new industry performance standards to reduce salmonella and campylobacter on raw chicken parts. We also proposed stricter standards for salmonella and campylobacter in ground chicken and ground turkey. These standards should help to reduce the occurrence of future outbreaks from poultry products. We anticipate finalizing these new standards early next year. We are also examining ways to tighten our salmonella standards for beef and pork to reduce the chance that these products will cause illness. We're confident that industry will strive to meet all of the standards that we are developing. As is evident from the Vital Signs report, however, foodborne illness outbreaks occur despite our best efforts to prevent them. If meat or poultry is implicated in an outbreak, FSIS will build upon the work done by our important partners, the states, the local governments, and CDC. The information gathered by the states and local governments and CDC is critically important to FSIS because if that information suggests that meat or poultry is involved, we will conduct traceback activities to attempt to identify the specific product that is the source of the outbreak. Our employees work to obtain information about the situation. For example, FSIS investigators visit patients and their families in an effort to gather information from shopper loyalty cards and to collect unopened packages of product from people's refrigerators. We analyze the product in our laboratories and send expert teams to conduct assessments at plants that produce the implicated product. To facilitate tracebacks, we intend to finalize a rule that will require operations that grind beef, particularly grocery stores, to keep detailed records on the source of the materials that they use. These records can provide crucial information in trying to identify the source of a foodborne illness outbreak. If we conclude in consultation with CDC that products we regulate cause the outbreak, we will take appropriate action, including asking a company to recall contaminated product, withdrawing our inspectors from the plant so that it cannot operate until the cause of the problem has been corrected, or both. As we look to the future, FSIS will continue to work with CDC, FDA, the states and local governments, and industry to advance our science-based approach to inspection and to illness prevention. Through collaboration, we can reduce the number of multi-state outbreaks. Thank you, Dr. Friedman.
Thank you very much. And before we turn to questions, I'd like to just give you the bottom line here. Americans shouldn't have to worry about getting sick from the food they eat. We have done a lot to improve food safety, but we need to do more. There are food processors and producers who've made a big difference and have improved practices and made our food safer. A few additional actions that can be done are things like keeping records so that tracing food from source to destination is quicker and more frequently possible, choosing only suppliers that use food safety best practices, using store loyalty cards to help identify what made people sick, sharing proven food safety solutions with others in industry. Food safety is not a competitive sport. Food safety is a collaborative sport for players throughout the food industry to work on together and meet or even exceed new safety regulations and standards. Let's now go to your questions, and looking forward to hearing from those on the phone.
The phone lines are now open for questions. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 and record your name. Please limit yourself to one follow-up question. To withdraw your question, press star 2. One moment for the first question. Thank you. The first question in the queue is from Maggie Fox with NBC News. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks very much. I have two very unrelated questions, but can you first of all comment about what Chipotle has done in closing so many of its outlets, and is that useful in trying to stop foodborne illness outbreaks? And I have a follow-up.
I think it's always better to take a broad action and then narrow it down as we learn more. So I think from what we've understood from the situation so far, they're being very responsible in their actions in response to the cases that have been reported.
And I was struck in the report that how few actually of the outbreaks are multi-state and how few are related to imported food. Does the fact that foodborne illness is mostly a local event kind of mask the effects of the bigger outbreaks, and does it make it harder to determine the range and scope of an outbreak?
One of the things that's helped us is the advancing use of networks like PulseNet and FoodNet, which allow us to track what happens with the food supply. It's really quite striking for those of us who worked in public health for a long time to find new vehicles, what we call vehicles, or new foods that can be contaminated with bacteria that we just hadn't seen before. And that's been possible to find because there's increased testing of using different genetic methods of identifying the fingerprint of different organisms. So I think the multi-state outbreaks are being identified with increasing numbers because we're looking more, but also because there perhaps has been some consolidation in the food production network, and that means that if there is a problem, it's frequently disseminated across multiple states. If you look at Table 3 in the report, there is a whole list of foods from outbreaks from imported foods, ranging from fruits to fish to nuts and seeds and dairy. So we have seen quite a bit from both imported and domestically produced foods.
The next question in the queue is from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First, Dr. Frieden, if you could say just a little bit more about, you were talking about the fatalities and hospitalizations in these multi-state outbreaks, and I believe you said the reason we believe that so is the germs that cause multi-state outbreaks are deadlier. I guess I wasn't clear on why these more dangerous germs would be spreading across states more than the maybe the not quite as lethal ones. And then I have a second question.
So many of the less lethal organisms are often spread by food safety practices in restaurants or in the home, and where you have end of the food supply chain contamination, that's more likely to be something like a norovirus or a rotavirus, which is more common but less deadly. In contrast, where you have a production that goes through multi-state, you may be more likely to have a listeria or an E. coli, which are more deadly, or a salmonella, which can be very widespread and have some fatality as well. That's why we believe that although these outbreaks accounted for a relatively small proportion of all of the recognized outbreaks, they accounted for more than half of the recognized deaths.
Okay, and thank you. And the second question was just kind of playing on something you said before about the better detection. You gave a statistic which we've heard before that about 1 in 6 Americans will get sick from contaminated food. That number is not changing, right? The overall foodborne illness is holding at steady levels, and what we're seeing with the multi-state outbreaks that we're, because of better detection and coordination of communication, that we're seeing what used to be outbreaks in different states now grouped together that maybe weren't grouped together in the past?
There are a few different trends here. One of them is that we're, I believe, getting better at finding outbreaks because we have a larger database, because more samples are being tested, because we're able to trace back to the food item much more frequently than we could in the past. Second, there does appear to be some consolidation of supply chains, and that means that if there is a problem anywhere in that supply chain, it can rapidly become a multi-state problem. In terms of the overall safety of our food, everything we've seen suggests that overall our food is safe. However, it could certainly be safer if more industries, more sectors, more people who are active in food production, distribution, and serving continued to improve their practices and meet or exceed the new food safety regulations and standards.
The next question in the queue is from Nadia Kuning with CNN. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I wanted to ask, in regards, because you all spoke about best industry practices, and I am curious if there are any efforts to kind of target some of these industries that are chains that may be repeat offenders in food safety issues. For example, I know obviously we're talking about the Chipotle outbreak, but I think they also had a salmonella outbreak earlier this year with tomatoes. Is there any effort to investigate perhaps why there may be repeat offenders in terms of looking at where they're supplying their food from, or is there any sort of punitive action that can be directed towards repeat offenders?
So this is Dr. Gensheimer with FDA, and a good question. As I noted before, there are many partners that we work with in the conduct of responding and preventing foodborne outbreaks, and certainly industry is one of those very critical partners. No one agency, no one organization can really work to really implement a fully foolproof food safety system without pulling in all those partners. And industry has really come to the table and recognized that need. And, in fact, industry really came together to work with FDA as far as support of the Food Safety Modernization Act and adding input on the rules that will be going forward. When it comes specifically to Chipotle, when we became aware of this investigation, which was really over the weekend, we had a conversation with corporate management late yesterday afternoon, and Chipotle fully understands the significance of the problem, although this investigation, I'll emphasize again, is still in its early stages, and we do not have yet identified any specific food vehicle associated with illness, but nevertheless, Chipotle is sharing all of their records with us, working with us to, in any way possible, to give us information about their suppliers. And at the end of that call yesterday, we did put forward the fact that we have seen them associated with some of the clusters this past year. And once the smoke dies down a bit from this current ongoing investigation, Chipotle has indicated interest in coming to FDA to meet with us to discuss what practices might be contributing to these investigations. And in these instances, we do invite CDC to these discussions, which we have actually done with other industrial partners in the past and have been very successful with those conversations.
All right. Will our operator check for other questions, please?
Again, if you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press *1 and record your name. Thank you.
Okay, it looks like we may be through with the key questions for now. I'd just like to first thank the FDA, the USDA. This is truly a whole-of-government approach. We meet regularly to review all potential outbreaks, and each of our entities brings to the table something that the others don't, and we're able to do things together that none of our entities could do on our own. So it really is a partnership among us and with industry to improve food safety for Americans so that Americans don't have to worry about getting sick from the food they eat, and so that we do make more progress preventing food contamination and see a larger number of food producers and processors keeping records, using safety best practices, tracking food supply so that we can quickly find and stop an outbreak if it does occur, and sharing proven solutions so that we can continuously make our food safer. I'd like to thank you all and also thank the staff at CDC, the scientists who worked on this report, and our colleagues, again, in USDA and FDA. Thank you all very much.
Before we conclude our telebriefing today, I want to be sure to spell the names of our guest speakers. Kathleen, K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N, Gensheimer, G-E-N-S-H-E-I, M-E-R, and she's Chief Medical Officer at FDA. And our other speaker was Philip Durfler, Philip with one L, and Durfler, D as in dog, E-R, F-L-E-R, and he is Deputy Administrator for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We'll post a transcript of this call in a few hours on the CDC Media Relations page. If you need additional information or have other questions, please call the CDC Press Office at 404-639-3286. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.